Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, let's do it again. It's time for As It Is, the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we have a very interesting story for you. We will talk about emergencies and what happens when language and understanding become a problem. If you listen carefully, you may understand how important it is to communicate well. If an emergency is involved, what you say and how you say it may even save a life. Are you ready? Let's get started with today's program. In most countries, people can make a telephone call to ask for medical or police help using just three numbers. In the European Union, the number is 112. Some Asian countries use 999. In North America, the number is 911. Wherever you are in the world, when you call for help, you do not want the person answering to say, "I don't understand you." In the United States, most of the workers who answer calls for emergency help speak just one language, English. But many people in the United States and people coming here from other countries do not speak English. So VOA went to a center where requests for help are received to find out what happens when the person calling speaks a language that emergency workers do not understand. We are about to hear a request for help. The phone call was answered by a worker in the Willamette Valley 911 Center in Salem, Oregon, in the northwestern United States. But it could have been almost anywhere in America. In most urban areas, workers receive requests for emergency help every day in a language other than English.
911.
Bueno, ¿estoy bien?
So, do you have an emergency? Do you have an emergency?
Sí.
Okay, just a moment.
Now, the worker will call someone at an agency that employs people who speak the caller's language. Every 911 center in the northwestern United States works with such agencies, called Emergency Translation Services.
Thank you for calling. What language?
Spanish.
Thanks for your operator number. One moment, please.
Thank you. Your call may be monitored or recorded.
On this call, it takes almost 1 minute for a translator to be connected to the person calling for help. Andrea Tobin is a training manager at the emergency center and a longtime worker there. She says the wait can be difficult for both the emergency workers and the person who needs help.
We get pretty tense, especially if we know it's a medical call or this person that is in obvious distress. When it's Spanish, it's pretty quick and easy for us to understand. When it's a different dialect, it becomes more complicated for us because we don't recognize them all. And then they put us on hold while they get an interpreter that is the language that we need. And that can sometimes be very quick. Sometimes it's 30 seconds or a minute.
The most common language needing translation is Spanish. Others include Russian, Vietnamese, and Chinese. Some managers of emergency call centers in urban areas of the northwestern United States say they are experiencing an increase in requests for help from people speaking languages heard in African and Middle Eastern countries. Translation companies like Telelanguage and Language Line say they can help people in 200 languages. Mark Buchholz is the director of the Willamette Valley 911 Center. He says using these services is less costly than employing workers who speak more than one language. Only 3 of his 55 workers speak more than one language. 2 of them speak English and Spanish. 1/3 speaks English and Russian. Mr. Buchholz says centers like his try to employ people who speak more than one language, but he says it is not easy to find these workers.
It's really tough to require a second language as a requirement to work for us. While it's important, we do pay a bonus, the volume isn't significant enough for us to have that an exclusive requirement for hiring.
A man has called the Salem, Oregon 911 Center for help. He is speaking in Spanish. He says 2 men in a car are chasing him. The interpreter is listening to the man, then talking to the emergency worker, who will send police to help the man once they know where he is.
En la esquina de Lee Street y One Way.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I'm standing right on the corner of One Way and Lee Street.
We don't have One Way.
It took the 3 people another minute to find out that the man was on the corner of Lee and 12th Street. Lee Street is a one-way street. Cars are only permitted to drive on the street in one direction. The caller thought that was the name of the street. Interpreters who join calls like this may be in another state. The companies that employ them tell the workers they can do the work from their home. These companies also help business call centers, banks, schools, and courts. In the emergency we just heard, the police were able to quickly help the man who called. Several managers of emergency call centers say it is important to be able to say the name of your country and your language in the language of the country you are visiting or living in. That may save you important time. Speaking of time, it's time for us to talk about today in history. It was on this date in 1873 that Lee DeForest was born. He was an American inventor. He invented a special knife used in medical operations. He also made a photoelectric cell, a device that made electricity move through wires when the cell had light shined on it. But perhaps Mr. DeForest is best known for his invention of the electron tube. That's why he is often called the father of radio. After radio came television, and it was on this date, 75 years ago, that the first baseball game was put on television in New York City. The Cincinnati Reds and the Brooklyn Dodgers played in that game. VOA's Christopher Cruz was there. Just kidding. He's not really that old. On this date in 1883, the world went boom. That was the day a volcano in Indonesia called Krakatoa erupted. It was so powerful an explosion that people heard it 3,000 miles away. 36,000 people were killed. The ash from the explosion circled the earth and changed the oceans and the weather for years. People who studied the American Civil War realize that on this date in 1862, an important battle took place not far from Washington. It was known as the Second Battle of Bull Run. It is named for a small stream that runs near the town of Manassas in Virginia. On anniversaries like these, you can usually find people dressed in old costumes, living and cooking in camps near the battlefield, just as the soldiers did so long ago. Sometimes they even pretend they are shooting guns at each other, like the Northern and Southern armies did. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's As It Is program. Remember, we are here 7 days a week to help you learn and improve your American English. If you are just listening on the radio, you are missing half the fun. We suggest you find a computer and copy the words and audio for each day's program. That way, you can listen and read along again and again, whenever you have the time. It's a great way to learn how to speak just like an American, if that is what you would like to do. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. Climate researchers met recently in Cameroon to talk about threats to Africa's land and animals. They said they believe the continent may lose as much as 30% of its animal and plant species by the end of this century. They blame the expected losses on the warming of Earth, population growth, and unrestricted development. The researchers represent 20 African, American, and European universities. They say countries south of the Saharan Desert are losing forest faster than any place on Earth. Wood companies are cutting down trees to meet growing demand from China, Europe, and the United States. The population is growing at 3% per year. There are now homes, factories, and farms on land that once was forest. Many African animals and plants no longer have a place to live as a result. Climate change also continues to threaten species. Thomas Smith is the director of the Center for Tropical Research at the University of California.
With a 1.5 degree rise in global mean temperature, Africa may lose 30% of its animals and plants. And unfortunately, with the increasing in CO2, that's been now estimated to be up to 3 degrees in terms of a rise in global mean temperature. That means we may lose 40% of all mammal species in Africa by the end of the century.
The African chimpanzee is one such animal at risk. Mary Catherine Gonder is a professor in the Department of Biology at Drexel University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She studies chimpanzees in the Congo Basin. She says their forest home is disappearing. She also says hunters continue to kill the animals to sell as food.
What will happen over the next 20 years, the distribution of those chimpanzees will change. Their habitat will change fundamentally, and it will no longer be around. So it's a very real threat. The habitats for those chimpanzees will be gone.
Thomas Smith of University of California says it's possible to develop Africa and care for the environment at the same time.
With these enormous challenges, we need to develop green economies. We need to make sure that the development that we do is sustainable. For example, we're working with parties here to develop new ways of providing green jobs. For example, areas that you can preserve forests and at the same time produce crops that are appropriate for people to sell and to eat. So we need to be thinking about how to preserve the natural processes and at the same time provide for the economic needs of the country.
The Congo Basin area of Western and Central Africa has the second largest equatorial rainforest in the world. It is important to the lives of millions of people. And that's the VOA Learning English Agriculture Report. For more agriculture stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. American officials say fibromyalgia syndrome affects up to 6 million people in the United States each year. In some nations, fibromyalgia is said to affect more than 3.5% of adult women and 0.5% of adult men. In our show today, Faith Lapidus and Christopher Cruz report on this disabling disease.
Fibromyalgia can have many symptoms, including depression and low energy levels. But pain, often throughout the body, is the main problem. Patients often have pain in their muscles and joints, and they always feel tired. Many people with fibromyalgia have trouble persuading doctors that their pain is real. Some of the most common symptoms of fibromyalgia are the same as those of other diseases. As a result, doctors often have trouble recognizing and confirming the presence of the disease.
Treating fibromyalgia can be difficult. Since there is no cure, doctors may experiment with different treatments and medicines. Some drugs work with some patients, but do not work with others. Patients with mild fibromyalgia often do not need any drugs. Their condition can improve with a combination of low-impact exercises, a good diet, getting enough rest, and patient education. Treatment of fibromyalgia patients can be costly and difficult for doctors because the pain only lessens. It never goes away completely. America's Food and Drug Administration has approved 3 drugs for fibromyalgia: Lyrica, Cymbalta, and Savella. These medicines have been shown to reduce pain for about half of patients.
Dr. Russell Rothenberg is a leading expert on fibromyalgia. For many patients, he says, a 30% reduction in pain is enough so they can work and take care of their family. Once fibromyalgia is treated, patients can be stable for many years, not getting better, but not getting worse either. Some patients have described fibromyalgia as taking control of their lives and making them a prisoner of their own body. Plenty of physical activity in one day can make muscles sore for days afterwards. Foot pain can be so intense that wearing shoes is impossible. Even after getting 8 hours of sleep, some sufferers wake up feeling tired. Normal activities like socializing with friends can be impossible.
The drug manufacturer Pfizer makes the drug Lyrica, which has been advertised as a treatment for fibromyalgia. In 2007, the Food and Drug Administration approved Lyrica as the first drug specifically for the disease. Studies involving 1,800 patients showed that some patients have less pain after taking the drug. The FDA called Lyrica an important development in the fight against the disease and a reason for hope in patients. At the same time, the agency said it is not known why Lyrica works. It also said that not everyone who took the drug was helped. Lyrica causes side effects in some patients, including problems with mental concentration and attention. The FDA has also approved the drugs Cymbalta and Savella to treat fibromyalgia in individuals over age 18.
Gail Cockwell is a rheumatologist who treats children and young people with arthritis and fibromyalgia. She is also a vice president at Pfizer. Dr. Cockwell told VOA that fibromyalgia is a very mysterious disease that has proved difficult to diagnose and treat. She says Pfizer believes Lyrica helps doctors ease their patients' pain and other symptoms.
Lyrica's primary effect, we believe, is on pain. We believe is on calming down excited nerves. And its impact on fibromyalgia overall is there beyond just the pain of fibromyalgia.
Dr. Cockwell says she has treated thousands of fibromyalgia patients in the past 15 years. She says that with good medicines, doctors can make a real difference in the lives of people with fibromyalgia. She says patients make an effort to find out what is happening in the body and how to get better. But she notes that people can be healthy one day and the next day wake up feeling tired and everything hurts. And she adds, the disease can last many years, even a lifetime.
Lyrica is an important product for Pfizer. In 2010, the drug produced $3 billion in sales worldwide. Dr. Cockwell says Pfizer is studying patients with fibromyalgia in China and Japan. And she says the company is looking at what she calls biomarkers in people with fibromyalgia. Biomarkers help researchers know what is happening in the bodies of people with a disease or medical condition. Dr. Cockwell says it is important to find biomarkers for fibromyalgia.
One of the really frustrating things for patients with fibromyalgia is that there's nothing to measure in labs or in x-rays. And sometimes people think if you can't measure something, then maybe it's not real. So we are looking at biomarkers. We're doing sophisticated x-rays like functional MRI and SPECT scanning to understand what happens in the brains of patients with fibromyalgia when they have pain, what happens to their brains when we treat that pain.
Dr. Cockwell says people are rarely hospitalized because of fibromyalgia, and most patients do not die from it. She says this is why it can be difficult to know how many people suffer from the disease.
Researcher Brian Wallett believes that all of the advertising for Lyrica may be bad for people with fibromyalgia. Dr. Wallett is the director of the Fibromyalgia Research Center at Georgetown Hospital Center in Washington, D.C. He is studying 67 patients with the disease. He is critical of doctors who look to drugs first to help their fibromyalgia patients.
Much of what I do is actually remove people from their medications so they can remember what they were like.
Dr. Wallett says the heavy advertising of a drug to treat fibromyalgia may give some people the idea that it can be cured. He says that is not reality. And he says studies of fibromyalgia patients have shown that very few get much better, and some get much worse, even with treatment. He says it is wrong to expect that patients will take a drug and all of their symptoms will go away.
One can pursue one's health and try to get better, right? But to expect a cure is unlikely. And the best thing that one can do is stop chasing cures and deal with the reality of one's situation.
Dr. Wallett says drug manufacturers market their treatments because they are concerned about making a profit. He says fibromyalgia drugs available today are very limited, and drug makers should not be selling a cure. He says that a return to a happy and pain-free life because of modern medicine does not match the reality of fibromyalgia. Dr. Wallet says he helps patients understand that they are not alone in their suffering. He gives them a better understanding of the disease and shows them how others have found ways to live with it.
Fibromyalgia sufferers have learned to enjoy the good days and control the pain on the bad days. They have come to accept the fact that a life without pain is probably not possible. However, there are more treatment choices available now than in the past. As a result, an improvement in the quality of their life is possible. Patients know they may be able to regain control of their life with the right medicine and by setting aside time each day to rest. Exercise like walking helps. So does gently stretching muscles and physical therapy, including water therapy. Help could also come from acupuncture, yoga, a healthy diet, counseling, and emotional support.
People with fibromyalgia syndrome can lead healthy and productive lives, and they can have long and successful careers. Experience and better science have made fibromyalgia easier to control for many, even if there is not a cure. In the 20 years since fibromyalgia was identified and given a name, much has been written about the disease. Much free and well-documented information about the disease is available, and groups have been created to help doctors who treat the disease and patients who suffer from it. Dr. Russell Rothenberg says the future is looking brighter for those who suffer from fibromyalgia.
I don't know if I believe that the disease will be cured in my lifetime, but I hope it will. But I am definitely optimistic about how my patients are doing and how they will do in the future, because the science of fibromyalgia is growing. So as the science grows, we're going to be better able to take care of these patients. There's a little bit less guesswork for me at this point. That's what experience and science bring to the table. And so, yes, I'm excited about the future of fibromyalgia. We know a lot more about it than we did when it didn't have a diagnosis name.
This program was written by Christopher Cruz. Our producer was June Sims. I'm Bob Doty. Join us again next week for more news about science on The Voice of America.